Hey, and we're on. You're listening to Sustainable Binghamton Radio. We've got an exciting show for you today. Yep. So we're gonna be having our nature preserve moment again,
it's a nature preserve moment.
And then we're gonna be talking to Josh Arbach about his company and what it's like to run your own business here in town and all of that good stuff. So listen for that. And as always, I'll remind you that we have a Facebook page, we have a web page, Sustainable Binghamton Radio. Binghamton Regional Sustainability Coalition is our parent, I guess you could say. So if you are if you're interested in checking them out, they also have a Facebook page. And we're almost up to 800, so you could help us there if you wanted to.
You could do a lot of good.
Yeah.
Listener. You could do a lot of good.
That was in the singular.
Not for a reason. That was not intentional.
No, no.
Our listeners have such solidarity. They think of themselves as one person. They think and act as one.
Right.
Solidarity is the name of the game.
Well, let me say here in response to that last week, just before Halloween, Thursday night, I was at the Belmar. It was zombie night. And I started talking to a guy at the bar. And he said he had listened to Sustainable Binghamton Radio that day, and he could talk about the show, so I know he wasn't just making it up.
Wow.
So I'm just going to say that we have listeners out there.
Zombies count.
We have listeners, and they hang out with zombies at the Belmar.
So anyway, so let's get to it with our
Nature
Preserve moment.
Oh, yeah, thanks for being here, Dylan, once again, as usual.
I don't know, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Coming a little, well, maybe not now, but a second ago we could. Oh, by the way, this is Dylan Horvath. I don't know if we've officially... announced you.
Oh, I don't know, but
steward.
Yeah, steward of steward of natural areas.
Official
nature
title.
Preserve. That's nature preserve
title.
Guy.
Yep.
Yep.
Anyone out there like the nature preserve? Send us an email if you like the nature preserve.
Yes.
Yeah. To sustainable.binghamton@gmail.com.
And respect it.
Please do that again some point in your in your nature moment.
Let's see. What was I going to talk? I don't remember what I was going to talk about now. But
that's okay.
Actually. You know, I lead a lot of little walks and things out there, and my goal is always to see as much wildlife as I can show people. And I'm often out there all alone, and I wish people could see through my eyes and see the things that I see. But last night, I had a bit of luck with my class. I actually brought my class out there. I teach a natural history course, and we... went out and for a couple hours last evening trying to do a night hike. For an hour and a half, we didn't really see too much besides we heard the chirping of a gliding or a flying squirrel out there.
What?
Yep.
Did you just say flying squirrel?
Yes, we do have flying squirrels out there. And if you're out in the woods, anywhere at night around here, they sound like a little bird chirping in the trees. And if you shine your flashlight up, you might see them glide around.
Okay.
So we didn't see them, but then we hiked back down trying to find the beavers, and I thought, oh, man, nobody can see anything, and that's been my luck this whole semester. And then one of my students pointed out and saw it, and in the ditch near the marsh trail, one of the beavers was out swimming around, and he climbed up onto the bank, and you could see his tail all nice, and my students were pretty impressed with how big he was.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people see a muskrat out there and think it's a beaver, and it's really just muskrats aren't really that big.
Yeah.
And when you see a beaver, you know it.
You know a beaver when you see
you
a beaver.
You know it. That's right. That's right. And this guy came out of the water, and kind of rare people got to see it grooming. They actually have a little comb on their claws, and they can spread this oil around to make themselves more waterproof. So he was sitting there looking like a Buddha, actually, sitting on his haunches. Then he leaned back with his head almost on the ground. I don't know why he did that, but he was just showing everybody how cool he was, I guess, but... And then,
as he lubricated himself.
Yeah, yep. And he got such good audience, and everybody loved it. But the funny thing is, on the way back, we're walking along the trail, and it's funny because this local local alum has been hearing some funny sounds in the woods at night around his house. And it sounds something like, let's see if I can do it, but it's kind of like that. Right?
I feel like we're on Car Talk.
Yeah. It was like, kind of like that.
Yeah. I feel like I've heard that.
Yeah. And it turns out that it's actually a fox.
Get out of here.
And they sit there and they're kind of do this bark, howl, whine type thing. And I thought last night it'd be so cool if my students could hear that. And as soon as I thought that, a fox started calling in the woods in the preserve. And just started doing that over and over again, so everybody got to hear it. It was amazing.
That is amazing.
But all that just points out that we have such great variety of habitat out there, and we have a wonderful variety of species out there, even with the activity of humans and so much proximity to a university. So
yeah.
It's a beautiful place.
How often do you do this this night walk?
I usually try to do once a month, although obviously I haven't done it this semester as much as I usually do. But
how do people sign up for that or get involved with that? That sounds like fun.
When I do public ones, I announce them on our Nature Preserve website, which is naturepreserve.binghamton.edu.
Okay.
And if folks really want to know, because sometimes I forget to put it on the website, we have a listserv at naturepr@binghamton.edu. And that's the Friends of the Nature Preserve. And I tell everybody what's going on, and they can come if they want to.
Okay, so that's naturepr@binghamton.edu? Binghamton.edu?
Yep.
Okay, cool. We'll announce that again. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so that's my little moment for you.
That's the nature moment.
We got some animals.
You answered what I've been hearing. My property back's on the nature preserve to an extent, and we were hearing this strange noise and scuffling, and we couldn't figure out. We're like, owls, this, that, and it had to be fox, because I see them during the day. But
And they, for some reason lately, they've been calling.
We thought it was like birds. That's the confusing thing, but it makes... That
yeah, sometimes you'll get an owl, barred owls will do that, and the young will follow the mother around screaming, and it sounds very similar.
But this was on the ground,
So one other weird sound you might hear at night is during the porcupine mating season, they tend to scream, and they sound like either a crying baby or a dying female or something. And they're really scary, but it turns out just to be a porcupine.
I would still be scared if it was a porcupine.
What time of year is the mating season for the porcupine?
And I can't actually remember when it actually is. I think it's...
Well, you'll have to come on.
I'll have to figure that out.
There's an app
I can't remember
for
when
that,
it is.
There's an app for that.
There's definitely an app for that.
Is, so.
I mean, there's an app for the menstrual cycle now for boyfriends, so there's got to be an app for that.
Yeah.
Right. And how do porcupines mate? Very carefully.
Yeah.
Yes. But anyways.
So
we really loaded this.
So yeah, we'll definitely have you on again. And we'll nail down when.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Because we got to figure that out.
Yeah. Priorities. Well, I mean, especially if it sounds scary.
And the United listeners want to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. With their righteous fist.
Yes.
That's right.
All right. Cool. Well, thanks. I guess maybe the transition question should be. Do porcupines like black and white cookies?
Ooh.
Dee-dee-dee.
Sugar's two of the four food groups. They must love
it. There's a little salt in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a little
They'll
salt
like
in it.
It.
All right. All right.
Certainly.
Cool. Well, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having
me. Appreciate
like
that.
All right. Come back anytime.
All right, then.
So, yeah. So Josh Auerbach, thanks for being here.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Could you tell us a little bit about your business and who you are?
Let's start with who you are.
Who I am.
It's
one and the same, I should say, because I'm commonly referred to as Cookie Man. I'm somewhat wedded to the cookie company, though I try and have a life. So
that involves tennis and swimming?
Sure. Yeah, exercise is important. Got to eat the cookies and got to earn them. So.
Right.
So, yeah, I make black and white cookies, big fan, and there was just an absence. There was no company that was really dedicated to it, and had an opportunity to register the domain blackandwhitecookies.com almost 10 years ago now.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, and just sat on it and, you know, had a dummy email, and people would email every once in a while, I'm in Cincinnati, that sort of proof of concept we were looking for. So it was very easy a couple years later to have people rally around the idea to get partners, investors and such, and, you know, start it up. You know, that was the easy part.
Yeah, right. Very good.
So, and you didn't start it here in Binghamton. You started it somewhere else.
Yes, I did start in New York City. We are a New York City company, and you know where the cookie comes from. But you know, we came to Binghamton. I love the area. I plan to stay here, regardless of the billions the company's gonna make. But truth be told, manufacturing here is very
cheap. Cost-effective.
Yeah, very cost-effective, and even distribution. So I took advantage of the scenery and the cost structure to be here, move my company here.
That's awesome.
And so it's not just your company that's here. It's actually your parents are here, too.
Yeah, they
It's a big group move.
Yes.
Family move.
We had some familiarity. They had a we ran a summer camp nearby outside of Windsor. So Binghamton was that city by the camp. We still have land here. But it was really just another coincidence that I brought the company here. Love the city. I told my parents who were retiring, although now they're back at work, but, you know, for good causes. But, you know, I said, move here. It's great. It's, you know, again, cost effective to live here, especially retiring. You have so much accessibility to a lot of art and culture, and they take full advantage of it and love it and happily move to Binghamton.
Yeah, it's one of those things, I think, with Binghamton that people, well, we have kind of two types of people that move here. One type is people that move here and don't see any of the positive and feel like they're forced to be here. But then we also have this other group of people that move here that really help people who've been here their whole lives realize what assets we've got really got here.
That's
true. And I think you're that second type.
Yeah. Well, you do have to be proactive. Mm-hmm. You know, but fortunately, you know, I grew up in a competitive area, and you just learned you couldn't sit back and let things come to you. So, you know, with that mindset, the city's fantastic, and just, you know, it's only going to get better.
Mm-hmm. So manufacturing in Binghamton, could you tell us a little bit
Where's the building? I think have I heard that it's on the east side of Binghamton? Or?
Yeah, on Griswold Street. So okay. It's pure manufacturing, no retail. You can't walk in and purchase.
Right.
But, you know, again, great spot, very cost effective. Pretty much anywhere, it's easy for shipping. I mean, that was one of the concerns when we did start in New York City, just getting trucks in and out. You know, forget about it. Forget the traffic, even the cost over the bridges and such.
Yeah.
And, you know, Binghamton, with the its different highways coming right through it, you have, you know, for FedEx, UPS, USPS, whatever, distribution is great. And even with the trucking lines and stuff. So I am somewhat surprised more companies don't take advantage. You know, they look at too much the bottom line. Sometimes saving on taxes isn't as good as, you know, coming here where you know your product can get out in a million directions.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it does. You ship nationally, right?
Yeah, and even internationally. So
Where's the furthest your cookies have flown?
I would have to say Australia and several times.
That would do it.
Yeah, there's a, you know, partly...
You got a fan club in Australia?
A lot, actually. I mean, we know we want to do franchising as well and go global with it, we have people interested in Australia, so we know that's one of the spots we'd love to be. And there's really a strong Seinfeld
because of that one episode. Especially it featured, what was that episode on season 5?
Oh, no.
Uh-oh, you put the Cookie Man on the spot.
That's a loaded question.
Oh, it's a dinner party episode. They go to a dinner party and they stop, and Elaine and Jerry stop to get, like,
I thought you were talking about something specific to Australia.
Oh, yeah, no, sorry. Okay. I'm jumping to the episode, Seinfeld.
Yeah.
I'm sorry,
Yeah, look to the cookie, absolutely. That's a huge,
That's a huge thing, right?
Yeah, and there's a second episode with Bette Midler, and she directs Kramer and says, if you don't get me a black and white cookie, I'm not going to be a pleasure to be around. So.
Yes. See, I'm...
So Seinfeld's been a big aid.
Definitely. And you can see on Twitter, I mean, how many references, because, you know, I'm always looking at and retweeting comments about black and white cookies. And most often, I even have a guy whose handle is Hello Newman, who just references me in his random Seinfeld tweets, which is great.
That's great.
Yeah. So there's a direct association.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you follow all the market trends and...
That's what you got. You know, it's what I do best. I let other things slide until I get, you know, the partners I need. But if you take advantage of, you know, understanding people and the social networking is really, you know, you can get good measure of what people are thinking and trending and so on.
So we have a lot of listeners out there that are, we have both students and we have some young professionals, and we have some people that are, you know, may be interested in starting a business. Obviously, you've already filled the black and white cookie niche around here, but what kind of background do you have educationally and alternative, you know, training or trial and error? Can you tell us a little bit about how
there's
you got to
16
be?
PhDs.
I knew it.
Basically, you know, a bachelor's. You know, I think the system should be, you know, you go to high school, you take, you know, 2 years off in trade and really try and figure out, because it's rare you go to college knowing what you want to do. And, you know, most often you don't and you get locked into something. So I switched it around. I was always the artist. So I actually, everything, I got into computers because I did graphic design.
Okay.
I got into cookies because I can make them custom. And the whole branding, building a company, to me, is creative. You know, I'm not looking at the business. I'm not looking to make money. I want the company to make money. But it is the, it's a creative project. So for me, again, it's just being creative and having, I did end up with a creative arts major, which, you know, it was relevant, thank God.
So as, art majors out there, it can be okay.
There's a liberal arts. I mean, a lot of companies like more well-rounded, and sometimes if you specify too much, companies frown upon it. So it's something to consider.
Yeah, that is encouraging to hear, even though I think that message is out there, but I think it's easily forgotten.
Yes, absolutely.
Because I definitely know that a lot of people tend to kind of go crazy with the specialization.
Yeah, I have friends that I know are in their positions today because they didn't specialize, and they're great at what they do, and companies saw that, you know.
So you kind of had this kind of background that eventually led you to a cookie company.
Yes.
Out of New York, and then you moved up here, and because of a couple of factors, when did you start researching Binghamton? Just because of the camp entirely, or how?
No, actually, it had absolutely nothing to do with the camp. We were specifically looking for, we knew the cost structure wasn't there to not only produce in Manhattan, where I was, but even in Brooklyn, and, you know, to get just the transportation, logistics, and then your costs, it wasn't worth it. So we realized the cookie, which is New York City, as long as we produced in New York, it was still good. It's still made in New York. So we expanded our horizons, and with that, looked towards, you know, Empire Zone. So we wanted to take advantage of that, which Binghamton has, you know, Albany, a lot of major.
And that's one of those things that people dispute a lot. Like, they keep saying, do Empire Zones work or not?
Well, but, I might have a different opinion now,
But they encouraged you to come up here.
I mean, I was looking at the numbers. If I get incentives where you can, and that's a bundle of incentives.
I don't know much about the Empire Zone structure.
Well, it may not. I mean, this may be all moot. I believe it's being dropped.
Okay.
It's really, you again have to be ultra proactive. You have to, you know, it costs money to get money. So there are certain issues, but there are benefits. You know, we clearly haven't taken advantage of a lot to my own fault. But at the same time, initially for a startup, you know, you're doing things right. It also shows your due diligence. But that said, we did look in different areas that offered Empire Zones. And for example, Yonkers, which is close to the city, maintained city prices. So you're paying, compared to Binghamton, over 5 times more of just your lease, possibly 10 times. Then you had Albany, for example. Forgive me for putting down Albany, but your Empire Zones were in places you didn't want to have a business. They were Empire Zones for a reason. Whereas Binghamton, they're just vacant. You know, the population used to be much larger, so you have just a lot of available space at very low cost. And then you have the Empire Zones to boot, and it's not in this crime-ridden or drug-ridden or any sort of toxic.
Toxic factors are limited.
At least we know of. So.
I was just over there actually the other day, and I was just driving around with a friend, and we were thinking about how, what a beautiful, like, working class neighborhood the East Side is.
Yeah.
I mean, it has its ups and downs like any neighborhood, but there's some really, you can tell it's still like, has a kind of a thriving core of people that live there and things.
It has a community. Yeah.
Very much has a community life and a kind of a cohesive feel.
And if the medical school goes there, I mean, it just adds to that.
Exactly. Right up there on the hill.
So your factory, how many, do you employ people there? Or is it a one-man show? Or
What's going on inside this?
What goes on inside that business?
I employ as little as possible, not by choice. But, you know, we're, you know, waiting for that big break. And, you know, we're in a situation with expansion, and it takes money to make money. And unfortunately, we came to that almost 3 years ago when the economy is going down. So we're still waiting, albeit, you know, with all these opportunities in front of us. So I have right now 2 part-time employees that I've been working with. And as long as you can get it done, and when you can, you know, I'd love to hire more and plan to soon, but it's keeping a skeleton crew and keeping costs down.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. So do you guys do a lot of sales locally, or any sales locally, or how's that work?
Very little. I mean, with our business, you know, most of it, one, coming over the internet, and you're getting people, consumers that are trying to get something that they don't have as much access to. So we have ordered, you know, Texas, California, you name it. And for that, they'll buy the shipping. It's a very efficient process to do the whole drop shipping. To do even localized delivery, with the population and the spending population not being that strong here, you know, really, there's too much loss involved to do the local at this point. I mean, we tend to do retail. We want to do retail here. And I did an experiment in Corning, which, you know, was good and bad.
I saw. It was a very cute looking shop.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And it still holds, you know, it's still effective for that purpose. I still have the pictures. You still know what it took to build it and so on.
Okay.
So as a model, it served its purpose. And I'd love to do the same thing in Binghamton when it's right, you know, when I can afford to do it as well. But there are things brewing. So there's always something in the works to happen. But again, back to that is our biggest consumers are outside of Binghamton. Mm-hmm. So, you know, where we are, we have to cater to where it's best. And we're looking a lot towards, we have new developments that are in and around New York City, for example. And, you know, then we can build a better brand and come back here, you know, and right. you know, support the community more effectively. I mean, we really want to have a showcase shop here, and that would be my dream. And, mm-hmm. you know, fingers crossed.
And my stomach's dream.
Yeah, everybody's stomach.
I think a lot of people could get behind that. That would be a really good thing.
Yeah, and I mean that with just, you know, prosperity in general to the whole area. You know, we expect,
Also, it's just so classic. I mean, this area is, like, kind of the time periods of this area that we idealize seem to go really well with the way a black and white, in my mind at least, a very classic black and white cookie.
It does seem
company.
To be kind of true to the history of Binghamton to have, like, a manufacturer, you know, making a product that's being used locally. That'd be really wonderful.
Yeah. And I completely agree, and I see that aesthetic. We are old-fashioned, and anything we associate, like, with our logo image, even these retro carton stuff, they're retro.
I've seen them all, so.
Yeah.
That's probably why it's, like, running off my head, like, how I would visual, you know. Like, some places, really, like, in Corning, they have the Victorian-themed ice cream shop or whatever. Like, That I'm not sure how that would fit in Binghamton, but I feel like the vision that I would have for your cookie store would be kind of that kind of a fit, but for Binghamton.
Yeah, and there's a lot of places I have been in where, it's very, you look at it and, we're here, and there. So absolutely.
Cool.
So,
but by the way, if you're just joining us, we're talking to Josh Auerbach of the Black and White Cookie Company. I think I got the company straightforward like that.
Absolutely.
It's based in the and based out of Binghamton.
East Side.
Yep. And you're listening to WHRW 90.5 FM. I have a question. Recently, a few friends and I were talking and, you know, pontificating about Binghamton, and we were, you know, I think someone made that I thought was a good observation, which is, if people would stop treating Binghamton like it had to be saved constantly, it might do a lot for Binghamton and that whole mentality. Have you thought at all about how that mentality kind of has permeated the community, this whole kind of sick, dying, you know, thing?
That's the first thing I noticed, honestly, when I moved here.
Yeah.
And that negativity is how I refer to it. And that's an upstate thing. It's a lot of been burned. How many times you can burn, and it sits with you, generational effect. And
that's a good point.
Yeah, and that's what does happen, I believe. I do see it. And knowing where my friends come from, it's the same roots that I see, that same sort of ominous, you know, overtone.
Yeah. Which kind of big company is gonna give us the burn next?
Yeah. Exactly. And you know, again, it's hard. We're in it, it needs a grassroots effort, which is easier said than done. I mean, Binghamton, you know, you're not going to get the high-end manufacturing because those big companies, which don't really care where they are, will go to Pennsylvania because of where we are geographically. It takes people who want to live here and love the community. And, you know, I think that's also an advantage with the, you know, slow growth, potential for faster growth, but it's a clean growth. It's where people, you know, they are hopefully taking these houses downtown and renovating them. You know, I could see us being similar to Portland, for example, and that type of community.
Yeah, which I think is exciting for a lot of people. And I think that's one of the reasons that this show exists and that the Binghamton Regional Sustainability Coalition exists is because as we try to kind of reinvent ourselves and it's more just reimagining the future. It's like, let's imagine the future.
Nice.
But that's exactly it. You have to imagine it. You have to think big. And that's what I would say when I'm, you know, came here first is, you know, no, you got to think bigger, you know, and you do take chances and you fail, but one thing at a time, and we see that a lot, one thing opens, one thing closes. You open 15 things and people go and we're good, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very, very cool.
That would be a really interesting survey to start really analyzing the persons who moved here by choice, persons who are from here, and try and really track the intergenerational conceptions. I don't know. I think that would be a really cool, like historical type project.
Yeah.
Wow. You get very telling results, I'd imagine.
Yeah. So,
I think
listeners who are looking to do some sort of major research project.
Yeah,
that could be very interesting.
I think in an upcoming show we will have an open time for some callers to call in and kind of we can just kind of pitch ideas for, you know, even just these ways that people want to reinvent or reimagine the future for Binghamton. I'd love to do that on the air.
Yeah, that would be fun. Maybe right before Christmas break.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. It'll be in the air.
Yeah.
I think that's the holidays you're speaking of, Hadassah.
Yeah.
Be politically correct.
Sorry.
Nah. Exactly. Yeah.
Capital H holidays.
Yeah. Now, for some reason, I love the holiday season. And Valentine's Day and Mother's Day. Hey, they're great.
It's all there. Yeah, you're in the right business.
Exactly. I used to be like, oh, what a waste.
What a waste.
On. Japan, they have two Valentine's Day. They have like a white day. The guys.
You gotta be kidding me.
Yeah, the men give typically white chocolate items to the females.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed, or the females, whatever, you know, something like that. So I'm like, bring it to America.
Let's do it. Yeah. Black and white cookie company is poised.
Yeah. For those holidays.
Yeah, I've seen some of your specialty designs. Wicked, for example, comes to mind. I don't know. Can you talk a little bit about some of these like higher end client things? I mean,
yeah,
it's pretty exciting to me to know that, you know, I guess like these big shots are eating cookies from Binghamton.
Yeah, well, again, we have, because we're blackandwhitecookies.com, the Black and White Cookie Company, there are a lot of people, they're searching. I mean, we are not marketing. We took 3 years to open shop, some of the negatives that happen in different communities. And with that, our marketing budget went. And so basically, you know, a ridiculous percentage of our orders are unsolicited. And to get these high-end clients to do the New York Times and do stuff with Bloomingdale's, Vitamin Water, mm-hmm. Lady Gaga,
yep.
Wicked.
I was most excited about Wicked, but I guess that says something about me.
But it was it was great. And it's
fantastic.
Yeah, we worked directly with them.
Wicked cool.
Yeah, they came. I mean, that one was a custom label. So it was just a matter of printing a label on the traditional cookies. So it wasn't a difficult one to do, but they look great. And, you know, it's what people, I was surprised when we first started out, we did used to offer more of our varieties. But people want the black and white and then a little bit maybe be the label or some sugar element to keep it that same traditional black and white and then add the customization. We, of course, have, you know, it ranges from completely mm-hmm. different color shapes and flavors and so on. But again, it comes back to like for the holidays, for example, we had red and green and blue and white and thinking people would love that. And we now, you know, though people could order it custom, we offer mistletoe sugar mm-hmm. designs or edible mm-hmm. dreidels that get embedded into the traditional black and whites.
So. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that domain space really does a lot of the marketing for you guys, I guess.
Yeah, I mean,
it's just right there.
Yeah, and we show up. We're number one most search engines. I mean, I come from, you know, the computers and IT and had that advantage of understanding, you know, how to do that right without mm-hmm. having to pay companies to get those returns. And again, the fortune of, you know, having all the names in the search, all the search terms in our domain name. So we're leveraged very well in that and, you know.
So, mm-hmm. so message to students, if you get a bright idea for a domain name, just buy it.
I register. Anytime I think of something that might be good and it's available, I register. I have a long list of names. Maybe nothing will come with them, but, you know.
But they're, I mean, how much does it cost to buy a domain name?
You can, like, $5. I mean, yeah. I do net firms. I recommend that for most people. But, yeah, I mean, sometimes they have specials, $5, even $10, whatever it is, just to register.
And that's, like, an annual fee or something.
Yeah. You can buy, like, discounted over, you know, 2-3 years and so on. But, you know, if you just want to get it and secure it and then maybe do something, mm-hmm. you never know. But it's location, 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 and domain names do matter.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you have all the money in the world and you can market it, then they really don't. But right. you want to be effective on the budget. So.
Mm-hmm. So.
All right. Well, very good. Should we
take a musical break?
Taking a break?
Yeah, I think we should take a musical break if it's that time.
All right. You're listening
to... What do we got for it?
Oh, yeah. What do we have? We are going to be switching off real quick. This is WHRW 90.5 FM, Sustainable Binghamton Radio. And we're back. That was nice. That was some smooth.
Soothing.
That was some smooth transition time just for all our listeners. Oh, listener.
Weren't those cookies great?
Yeah. Oh, man. We are feasting over here, everybody. Blackandwhitecookies.com. Check it out. We're talking.
You got some on your face.
Yeah, so it's kind of embarrassing. I think it's gotten a lot of wildly out of control. But we're talking to Josh Auerbach of Black and White Cookie Company, and he has based his company here in the Binghamton area.
Relocated his company here.
Yeah, that's actually what's happened. To be more specific,
creating
and my family
and his family. Yeah.
More if I could have did a better job convincing, but
hey, but there's still time.
Yeah,
maybe when you someday open your big store here, maybe more people will relocate.
Yeah, it'll happen.
So
yeah.
We talked about a lot of things there during that break, didn't we?
Yeah,
maybe we really
should recap some of them.
Yeah, we should. So should we kick it off with carts? Because I really.
Sure.
I like
the kick
idea.
It off with carts. Can you explain this concept of carts that's sweeping
the nation?
Right. I mean, okay. A lot economy driven. You know, cost. Yep. Everyone took hits. Incomes. You had a twofold process. You had corporate execs who were tired of it. They lost earnings and want to get out, be their own boss. So that was the type of new franchisee. And, you know, they're looking for a box. It's easier than starting yourself, but they also have the money to do it. Then you have people who couldn't afford the traditional franchise. I mean, you had your average franchise fee was like $250,000 just to be that. Then you had your build outs, your marketing, your advertising.
I'm trying to remember. Josh, another Josh, was, you know, excited. You know, we're a big Moe's fan, and he was thinking about starting a Moe's, and it was, you had to prove that you had so much money on hand that you're, you know, liquidatable that it was just like, whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
it's a big deal.
There's that. And I mean, that drove, you know, again, with the market and stuff, that drove towards more cost efficient types of, you know, getting your franchise out there, your products to market. And that's where, you know, really carts and more exclusive, more high-end carts, because you had in the past that always existed, but they were sort of, I wouldn't say, you know, trashy for lack of a better word. But the gourmet carts started coming into favor because you had the people who had the money, wanted a quality product, you know, again, had not the money for the current economy, nor could it really support those type of ventures. So, again, carts started taking a hold, specifically Portland. You know, carts... Anything,
what does a cart look like,
typically? They go from push carts to, you know, mobile trucks, and some of them very large, and you have converted buses. People get very inventive, and, you know, it's great because there's a lot of design that's gone into it. And, you know, one of the other things on the consumer trend is rather than one place selling many items, you want to go to this place for that, that place for this, and so on. So you have...
The opposite of the Walmart. Model.
Yes, the very opposite, because people think the mindset is I'm getting something better and it's more cost efficient, especially if it's coming out of this one gourmet cart. I'm not paying for the overhead, I'm not paying the waiter and so on. So they really think there's getting the value and quality at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And I'm when we're talking about these carts, it kind of reminds me of like the idea of potentially like with the buses, like sometimes if you're thinking about putting in rail or, you know, light rail on a trolley system kind of a thing in a town before you build, you know, the hard system or
infrastructure,
all the infrastructure, you would run the bus routes to see where it actually makes sense. So it seems like with the carts, eventually you could even start a restaurant once you've picked a location. But location, as you've mentioned with domain names, is so difficult to, you know, like you have to get the right one. That with carts, if you found the neighborhood and you're like really nowhere else want, you know, like, this is the place for me.
Well, you,
like,
can move. That's, yeah, the other thing, the cart. You can move hourly. You can, yeah, you know, you can, that you're not limited to one spot. Right. Or if you're at one spot, it works out well and you can stay there. Carts, right, do grow. They add, right, seating, and that does happen.
Yeah. So there's, yeah, there's lots of potential for playing around when you have a cart.
Right. And you also have, I now, what carts are doing is they're coming together, especially in Portland. They're building, you know, taking vacant lots and making cart malls. So they have facilities for customers, bathrooms and such, and also facilities, hookups and so on to people for carts. I mean, they just, you know, hook up your cart into, and there are these cart malls, and there's not one, there's several, and they're growing. And with the way it's trending in other cities, that's going to happen in other cities as well. Even, you know, small cities can support a cart just as much as a large city. Right. And that's the beauty of the cart.
Right.
Yeah.
And we definitely have lots.
Yeah, and you see them here, more growing, and you see, yeah, signs up. And, you know, again, is the novelty of getting that one specific thing you want.
The over, from,
you
know, the place that makes it the best.
Right. You know, or, right, the greasiest, or, you know.
Whatever.
Pick your poison.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
What kind of carts do we have around here? I mean.
There's a Fish Fries.
That's, yeah, right.
There's
is that the Doug's? Is that,
Doug's.
Are they, yeah, based, well, out of, there's Corland? A couple of them, but.
Oh, okay. There's a couple of them.
Yeah. And you do have.
You have the, I mean, just the hot dog guy downtown,
sure,
at the farmer's market. Carts are great for farmers markets,
yeah,
which are already set up all over town.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's a good model, and again, it depends on, you have to have the other efficiencies that go with it. So if they involve a lot of production and so on, they may not be so viable. But if you have a you know, snow cones, look at snow cones, shaved ice,
yeah,
you know, those carts is $4 for shaved ice. I mean. It's for me, it's great. I love seeing that, and people will line up more so for the novelty of it.
Right.
And we're tapping into the same thing. We can do it competitively, and I'm like, well, if they're going to buy $4 for that, you can get a custom black and white with your choice of flavored icing, serve warm, and then toppings as well. So for,
yeah,
less money,
right? Yeah, yeah, that's, yeah, that's when,
oh,
things really take off.
Oh, you're making my mouth water.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
But yeah, so carts. Yeah, and you know, I miss, as a kid, I bring it up whenever I can, when the mini mall across from Boscov's actually was a food court. I could see that being an indoor cart space.
Absolutely. I mean, and in any place that we were talking, you know, we were looking at even these brick-and-mortar spots, instead of one individual retail, you can have several carts or little kiosks, mm-hmm, built within. Because you don't need much space.
Even. Almost like the Quincy Market.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what, you know, where I was talking about today with, like, the Limelight. They converted the church, which got converted into a club, is now into a market. And it's similar to Chelsea Market, but they also have non-food items and stuff.
This is in Manhattan, just for everyone's,
yeah, and, and it's gourmet.
We had to ask where it was.
Yeah.
The,
yeah,
Limelight.
Yeah, they knew. They're just hiding it.
Yeah, we're in the know.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, that's showing part of that trend of that niche market, where beyond the food court, people want now gourmet or these quality in that type of food court, in a nicer food court setting. But that's what, mm-hmm, people are looking towards now.
So my question, I guess, maybe, I mean, it seems like, I hate to jump to this too early, but, like, I mean, this is the show. Is the cart model, is that sustainable for community? Do you think that... that model encourages people to stay in a community and to invest in it. I don't know.
Right. I mean, you know, yes and no. It can afford some people a business opportunity. So especially in this, you know, with the cost of living being as low as it is here,
mm-hmm,
it's very viable for, you know, X amount. You have to control your areas and you can't oversaturate it.
Right.
You know, and that's something, you know, because you're growing with it, it's not like you're going to start launching 100 carts in Binghamton. So you can, you know, again, we're looking at our smallest push carts, you know, bamboo for the, you know, as building it as green as possible,
mm-hmm,
as local as possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the supplies, as, you know, as, again, as local as possible. So you have some of that, you know, generating income back into the community. But, you know, carts as a whole, you don't want it to take away from the restaurants. I don't think it will here. But, you know, that's one risk if they became,
yeah,
so popular.
Right. I know they fight over that. I think maybe it was L.A. I'm trying to remember. I was watching a PBS documentary about it, and there's some warring over turf.
Yeah,
between the carts and instead of this kind of more food court model for carts. They were having kind of warring, but I think it was inside of city, so the traffic was the issue. Yeah.
And that's any, you'll find an article like that in any city. There's carts and restaurants or multiple carts. Yeah.
There's going to be the politics behind that and stuff. Yeah.
But if it's controlled, there is room. I mean, again,
they get a license from the city or something like that.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, in New York City, I forget what the numbers are there. I'm making up numbers, but there are 15,000 licenses and 150,000 carts or something, you know.
Yeah,
something.
Right. The black market for licenses. And I use 15 because I think it was that like a black market license was $15,000 and something. And that shows for a hot dog cart, which would show you again the numbers that they must be doing.
Yeah.
To, you know.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. They have to, you know.
But I think the type, one thing that I can visualize in terms of sustainability and carts is the walking aspect.
Yeah.
Thinking of that nice, all the greenway, the walking, the river walk area, that would be a great place to have
and
carts. And having carts, you know, I feel like it kind of could feed off of each other, because the more people you have out, the more people you're going to have out, because they feel safe and comfortable and it feels social. I'm thinking of rail trail really took off in terms of people.
Yeah.
So if we can, you know, get people out, and then there's, you know, fun carts, and it's more of a festive feel, then you're going to get even more people out. So I feel like there could be a feedback loop there.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, like you said, some of the spots downtown along the rail trail, along, you know, the trails downtown.
Yeah.
Basically.
By the Confluence Park.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can put a couple of, you know, again, the other advantage is you have the availability of products that you don't have, more vegetarian fare, more specific cultural fare that you can get through these carts. So you also bring in something new, and you also have, you know, organic. You can have healthier options. Admittedly, there aren't that many healthy options in Binghamton when it comes to eating.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you could definitely build in some protections to make it more sustainable. You know, even like we were talking about this whole kind of indoor kind of market concept and having kiosks or carts inside somewhere. I don't know if there's a precedent for this, but, you know, some could be, you know, on contract to be there for a certain amount of time. Other people could have, you know, more shorter term contracts. I don't know.
That's how they do it. They do it. They're typically done like that. So that's the exact model we'd follow. And, you know, Binghamton historically had one. So you can sort of tie that in. And
did it really? Where was it?
Somewhere. but it had like a more.
Was it like an outdoor or indoor?
It was like a pavilion. Indoor marketplace. But, you know, again, with the aesthetic, with the way the community, you know, it fits here. Let alone, you know,
it doesn't feel like a forced thing. It feels natural.
Yeah, and there's a demand. I'm sure, you know, that would draw more students downtown too, because you know, that's a good market for it. You know, if I were a student, I go and I have all these different specialty options. I'm there.
Yeah,
and I'm not paying a fortune as well.
And it could even become possibly a small grocery. You know, if you got some groceries down there, because there's gonna be more students than ever living down there in the closest grocery store is on the south side or on Main Street.
Yeah, and that is a concern. So
Very interesting.
Regarding the healthy choices, though, I know in some other cities, because I've been on some webinars regarding what other places are doing about healthy eating options. And one of the things they have been doing is to have a steep price differential between the licensing cost to have a regular food cart and have a healthy food cart, to try and promote the healthy food choices. But then once you have the cart culture, it builds. I mean, that's the thing. You can either have these areas where the traffic is so high that they actually impede each other, or if you're working more of in the cooperative system, well, great, I can get my salad and then I can get a cookie. Having multiple options could encourage a family to go out.
Well, if
everyone likes something different.
Yeah, and if you watch, like, there are a lot of, again, back to Portland, if you look at them because of they're all together and they'll go interviewing one after another, there is a camaraderie, there is an understanding that, you know, you have diversity built in with you not having the overhead. Because, you know, again, these shops now having too much of everything, you sell this but not that. And, you know, in this day and age, you have to sell every last thing you make. You really, you know, you don't have room to do anything else. So, you know, that brings other people, and maybe someone goes to get this, but their daughter wants that. You know, you
right.
have any sort of combination of things that can just help everybody.
Yeah.
In Portland, I don't know if you would know this, but have they found that the cart system has been like an incubator for making more permanent type businesses?
Yeah, actually, I should send you some links. There are actually some sustainable, similar entities like yourself that are revolved around part of the reasons these cart marts are happening. I don't know if that's the term. I just threw it out.
But there now.
Coin it. Yeah.
Kurtmarts.com.
Hey, that's me. You heard it.
Kurtmarts.com. It's a race.
It's probably taken. But,
yeah, it's definitely taken.
Now it is.
Yeah.
But
that's the kind of listenership we have.
Yeah, they're rallying around it and promoting it and, you know, making it happen for all the reasons we spoke of. And mm-hmm. I'll have to find those links, but you'll find it very interesting. But here, you know, this would be a great example. This would be a great experiment because, you know, again, it may not work here, and the seasons are different here.
Right.
So indoor, outdoor, that has factors. But, you know, it's cost effective to try. Not everyone, you know, not doing all these individual brick and mortars and all these other insurance
right.
fees that
are. It pains me so much to see all the, well, no one ever, it seems like with a lot of the franchise model, they don't ever want to put in the thing that they're building into a pre-existing building. So they build a new building instead of renting or buying one
yeah,
of the old buildings.
I hate that.
And then they go out of business and they leave an empty building.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So
oh, yeah. It's cheaper.
This is. Well, I don't know if it is cheaper. I think it's part of the model, though.
Short-term thinking.
But yeah, I mean, a lot is dictated by those
franchises.
And,
yeah, country.
You know, it is terrible when you could take, I mean, it fits better when you make it work within something old and authentic, you mm-hmm. know, it has that added nuance. So
right,
yeah,
but
yeah,
boxes it's
that
are
sense
cheaper.
Of place that we just keep beating on people.
And look at Burger King, McDonald's, any you name them all, they all change their designs. For
which has been a modern thing. It's been the next
cheaper.
Iteration of a chain, I think.
But it's because walls, you know. Four walls are cheaper than any sort of decorative elements, and
right.
that's really, you know, the bottom line. That's why they do it. So, you know, you want to retain. That's the beauty of the carts, too, is you can have that uniqueness.
Elaborateness.
So you still have that novelty, and that's what you can see, what people will go and wait in line and not even know what they're buying based on what they see, you know, where they're buying it from. You know?
Right.
It's true. That's pretty incredible. Well, we've been talking to Josh Auerbach of Binghamton Cookie Company. I'm sorry, the Black and White Cookie Company.
That
Slip. Based in Binghamton.
Yeah. Slip.
Yeah, I'll register that.
Yeah,
one.
We'll take, yeah.
take that one, too.
Officially taken ownership of you.
Yeah. And cartmart.com.
And cartmart.com. Let's not forget about that.
Yeah. May look available, really.
Yeah, but his website is blackandwhitecookies.com.
Mm-hmm.
And
ours is sustainablebinghamton.org.
Yes, it is.
Or BinghamtonSustainability.org. Whoops.
It's that one.
I swiped it, you know, slipped it because our email is sustainable.binghamton@gmail.com.
It's a mouthful.
Our website is BinghamtonSustainability.org.
We should probably really work on that, huh?
Make
that a more marketable, easy to say.
I I'm getting confused because it's the inverse of our email.
That would confuse me.
Yeah.
Anyways, thanks for being here. You're listening to WHRW 90.
Oh,
point.
Question.
Yeah.
Do you take interns?
We do. We've worked a lot with interns. So, you know, we're welcome. There's always projects that, you know, we have out there in many different fields. So,
right on. So if you're interested in maybe opening
website.
Your own company someday, maybe interning would be a good idea.
Yeah, and I believe we're listed at the school here.
Oh, good.
Internship program. I probably haven't redone it in a while.
Is there any specific qualities you're looking for in interns?
Initiative, really?
Initiative.
Yeah. I know. I see that in kids, I say, these days in college students. There's a lack of initiative. So I'd like to see more of it. People really, again, the word proactive, you know, go mm-hmm. out there. We can, you know, give you instructions, but it comes up to you to go with those instructions and go one more with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't have that skill set, you know, it's going to be harder and harder for you. So
absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, that's the encouraging word of the day. So this is Sustainable Binghamton Radio. Thanks for being with us. We'll be here next week, same time, 5:30 to 6:30. See you then.
Yep.